the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 161 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and at nfl.com/Sheck. S-H-E-K. We want to talk about some football, football, and more football. Yes, NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, but Tebow, don't you know? Tebow. That's what we have to talk about. And let's do it right now with the man who just picked up all his belongings, shipped himself, his lady, and their baby from New York City out here to the West Coast to the NFL Network Nerve Center in Culver City, California, the editor-in-chief of Around the League. It's Greg Rosenthal. What's the poop? What a pleasure to see you out here permanently now.
It's nice to be out here. It's so quiet up here, though. I'm used to seeing you and all your little henchmen.
My henchmen?
You know.
What am I, like the Penguin in the old Batman series? I have guys dressed in matching turtleneck shirts.
Well, you're calling the shots. Their name's not on the front of the program. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Oh, speaking of that, let's say hello to the guy seated behind the glass there. Black tie, shockingly. On vacation. He's on vacation for roughly two-thirds of the calendar year. And filling his void, a new addition to the tie rack here, it's Skinny Tie. What's the poop? It's a perfect name for him, too, because he wears a skinny tie all the time. What's happening, Skinny?
Not much. Just glad to be here to be on your show for the first time. I've observed many times a black tie doing nothing back here, as he usually does, but I'm here to step it up a notch.
Hey, this ain't NPR, boy. Put some bravura in your voice, would you? You know, some salt. You know what I'm saying to you?
You want some emotion?
That's right. I just want you to bring it. That's all. I don't know what that means.
I don't understand the ties in the office when it's not required. This is happening around this building. Why would you do that?
I like success. You dress for success.
I'm with him. This is a youngster. This is a young man seated behind the glass. Look, he wants to put a winning face on what he's got going on there.
It's one of the nicest things about coming here from 345 Park Avenue is that I didn't go in there every day, but when I did, you had to wear a suit.
The East Coast Nerve Center requires a suit each day.
Yes, it does.
Really?
And a tie. And everyone takes it off right away. After about 6 to 9 months, I decided to stop wearing a tie because no one that I worked with was there. I'm not reporting to anyone. I'm not having any meeting. And I actually went and looked at the manual that they give you when they hire you and checked out what the dress code is. And it just said you had to be professional and that you can't be outdressed basically by people you're meeting with. I'm not meeting with anyone. So I went suit, no tie. But that's as casual as you can get.
Wait a sec. So it's not a requirement. I guess it's just the culture over there. Isn't that crazy, though, that there's such a difference in culture that in New York everybody's walking around in a suit and most guys with a tie? And out here, I mean, I walk around in Chuck Taylors most days.
I mean, everything's different. I mean, the commish is a floor down from where I was. The commish is there. Jeff Pasch, a lot of big-time people.
Do you see the commissioner on a regular basis?
You see him in the commissary every once in a while.
When he sees you, does he say, "Hey, Greg, how are you?"
We don't know each other well, so
does he know your name?
He probably knows my name, but that's more on me than him. I'm not one to come up and, you know, glad hand and say hello and introduce myself. But a lot of people do, you know, say hello, commish. I like that he's like the president, though. Everyone calls him commish.
They say commish.
Everyone. Yeah,
really?
I didn't know that was a thing.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, when he's going by in the hall, you'll see everyone like, "Hello, commish. Good morning, commish."
Yeah, Raj would be too informal, I feel, but
Mr. Goodell
would
makes
be
sense
weird.
To me.
Too much, though. He's not an old guy or anything. He seems like a regular fella. And it's not glad handing.
No.
I mean, you could talk football with him.
No.
He legitimately, from what you've gathered, does Commish Goodell like to sit around and just talk about football? Like, hey, I think that the Eagles defense is going to have a hard time trying to wrangle both Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz this weekend.
I'm sure he'd love to find time in his day to do that. But yeah, but I think he's into it. I mean, you could tell there's some people that work for the NFL that aren't as big football fans as others. I think he's a big football fan. I heard stories, the reporters trying to like corner him you know, in the lunchroom to get information that that was frowned upon. But I think, you know, in the past that's happened.
I think, you know what? You're new out here. You're an editor-in-chief. That means you got some juice. And I'd like to think that perhaps with my help, a new broom named Rosenthal can sweep clean. I don't like the dead weight around these parts. I don't like I don't like NFL employees who don't know who Rocky Blyer and Drew Pearson are. This is insane to me. Why do you want to work in the NFL if you don't know who football players are?
I couldn't agree with you more, because I was surrounded by a lot of more business development and a lot of other, you know, parts of the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember
when, all right, they can stay because they're whatever business.
But they should be into football. There's a lot of CNBC on the TVs there. That's worrisome.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's
no worrisome. Good. When Junior Seau passed away, when he tragically died, I mean, I remember, wow, that's – it doesn't get much bigger in terms of an NFL story. And I'm covering the news, and we're writing – 7-8 posts on that and all the different reports and everything and everyone commenting. It's taken up our day. And I that was early on when I got hired. And I just remember 7 or 8 hours later hearing a couple of people go, did you hear what happened with Junior Seau? And I'm thinking that's yesterday by now.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they had just found out that. And come on.
Well, it's the equivalent of if anybody didn't know about Tim Tebow at this point. Wonder if we could suss out one soul walking these halls who does not know what is going on with Tim Tebow.
I know people who know nothing about football who know who Tim Tebow is. They're like, oh, he's the religious one. So I think you're going to have a hard time finding that. But it could be a good mission for us to attempt to.
Mission and Tebow. I see how what you did there. Very subtly how you worked that in. Now, Rosenthal, so you are, like I say, you sit atop the Around the League mountain. We enjoy bringing in Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler, Mr. Fancy Pants, as often as we possibly can here. We love the Around the League Debate Club. And you visited us on a couple of occasions over the past year, year and a half. And so we look forward to continuing with that as long as it's cool. Are you now going to do, though? I like the idea of an Around the League podcast. How say you?
Yeah.
Well, because we do the Debate Club already.
Right.
And we put that in with our other podcast. And then we're going to get into football. We're talking. Oh, by the way, coming up, I should let the listeners know, Jason Witten, all-pro tight end of the Dallas Cowboys, coming up in just a little bit. We'll talk with him. Meantime, we're talking to Rosenthal.
I think you're onto something, this ATL podcast.
I like the idea of it because you guys are constantly churning out. I always say whatever's going on in pro football, Around the League is covering it, and always with a bit of mirth, which is what I appreciate. A little bit of commentary, always stuck in there. It's not simple reporting. This happened. You always then, you evaluate ever so subtly, and then sometimes not so subtly. Chris Wessling, as a for instance, the newest fella is at Around the League, has put out his top 40 wide receivers list, and it's pretty compelling stuff, and we'll get him in here at some point soon. But all right, Rosenthal. Let's talk about the big news. You're not just somebody who's interested in it because you like pro football. You happen to root for the New England Patriots. Now, let's talk broad strokes. Tim Tebow to the Patriots as recently as a week ago. His career as a pro, or at least at the NFL, maybe CFL or where, whatever other hokum is out there. He was never going to play quarterback again in the NFL. Now he is on arguably the team that is the has at least been the most competitive for the past decade. Go.
Well, I don't think it's a huge surprise. When we first, you know, when he
first. You
don't
think it's a surprise?
It's a surprise as of 5 days ago. But when he first got cut, we made a list on Around the League, most likely landing spots. The number one name on the list, New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. I always thought he'd get a job. I never thought he wouldn't have a job. Pat White has a job. It's not that hard to get a quarterback job in the NFL. There's a lot of quarterbacks out there that have done a lot less than Tim Tebow. So it just never made sense to me that he wouldn't get a job somewhere. I just assumed it would happen.
From the outsider's perspective, or somebody who doesn't root from the Patriots' perspective at least, it gives me a cold chill up my spine. And my first reaction is to denounce it. How silly, Tim Tebow. What place is there for him on that roster when you have Tom Brady? Arguably, you know, who knows what happens over the next 3-4 seasons, but if things go the right way, he might be the greatest quarterback of all time. That's might be how we regard him. And all of a sudden, Tim Tebow, and then Ryan Mallett, big arm kid behind him. What place is there for him? And then I realized I was doing that to my brain. I was trying to talk myself out of Tim Tebow being successful there. I wanted it to be about Bill Belichick's hubris and I can make this work. But then you just look at the facts, and Troy Brown in the twilight of his career goes from being a wide receiver, or along with being a wide receiver, suddenly is a semi-capable defensive back. I'm actually stopping good teams and making legitimate plays and contributing. And Mike Vrabel goes from OLB to a pass catcher in the red zone for him. So why not Tim Tebow? What do you think specifically? How do you imagine they're going to deploy him on the gridiron?
I don't think they will much at all. I don't think he'll be much of a factor.
Then why would they get him? Why would they bring in this after watching what happened in New York a year ago and the circus? And I think it's very human. If you really people say that doesn't make any sense when you say that. But when people say to me in response to what I'm now going to tell you, which is I don't think those guys like answering questions all the time about Tim Tebow. I think it's annoying to them. It's a distraction to them. And at some point gets in their head and takes them off of what they're supposed to be focused on. People say, oh, who cares? Oh, why would that be? You're overstating that. No, I think these guys have egos and I don't think they like dealing with it. And it's not Tim Tebow's fault, but it happens. And so if you're the Patriots or any other team, why do it? Because unless you perceive that this guy is really going to be a huge X factor for your team.
Because they don't care about that media glare. They feel like they've been through it before and they can handle it. I mean, they button up everyone. Everything that comes in there, you expect it to be a problem. And Tom Brady's ACL recovery was practically a non-story by the time that thing was over with. They shut it down. They let Tim Tebow have a 30-second statement, take no questions. That's the last we're going to see from him in a while. Why do they do it? I can't really figure it out, but there's a couple reasons, I think. One is the relationship Belichick has with Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow, and that they're just doing him a solid. Not really Meyer, but more Tebow. You know, Josh McDaniels, he drafted Tebow in the first round. In 2010, I heard very strong buzz, we'll say, and this was coming from the Tebow camp, that the Patriots gave Tebow a guarantee that they were going to draft Tebow if he got to X spot in the draft. Wasn't in the first round, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I think they always kind of liked him as a player, just, hey, you know, we're not going to let this guy fall too far. But who takes him instead? Josh McDaniels in the first round. He's now on the Patriots. Josh McDaniels brought in Michael Hunamanawea from St. Louis. He brought in Greg Salas. He brought in Brandon Lloyd. He brought in Spencer Larson from Denver. Who are these guys? What impact? First of all, not a very good track record of guys that he's brought in, that he's worked with. And so why not bring in Tebow? I think that's what they look at it. Hey, do we like him better than Mike Kafka? Yeah, we do. So let's bring him in.
But I mean that you say that, and it sort of, yeah. Oh, by the way, he's obviously better than that. But he really is not somebody who you can throw in there in a conventional way and say, yeah, all right, guess what? Mallett just got dinged too, and Brady went out in the first quarter. Hey, Tebow, run the show. It would be a grossly different offense. You wouldn't be able to say, do with Tom Brady, run the plays that
stop.
Tom Brady's running.
But he's the third quarterback. I mean, I can't believe I'm defending Tebow, because at the time, you know, I was not on the Tebow train. It all seemed a little ridiculous and a lot of luck involved, and I didn't think he was going to have much of a career in the NFL. But he started a lot of games for a team that went to the playoffs. He was a starting quarterback. He won a playoff game. Are there other number three quarterbacks out there that are really better than him? Probably not. I mean, you can throw him out there. He's not going to ruin your team.
But that's exactly what he could do. It's not his fault that the Jets stunk the way they did, but he certainly didn't help matters. And I think you could make a case, as I said, roughly at this time 1 year ago, that they're really going all in with Sanchez here on his frame of mind. You bring in a sideshow like Tebow, he's either going to rise to the occasion or he's going to crumble from all the pressure associated with it, the daily questions that he's going to get about it. Now, I know Tom Brady's not in the same spot, But I still say, I can't imagine an organization that's as closed off as the Patriots are. And it's funny that this would happen in the same week that Wes Welker goes out and, you know, essentially insinuates that it sounds like the Soviet Union or something. Shame the devil if you say boo. Now, don't have an opinion. Don't share with anybody. But so I don't think an organization that's closed off would bring in Tebow. I think it's worse than that. As somebody who's not a Patriots rooter, I think that Belichick doesn't take this gamble unless he feels like. And let's remember, too, Tim Tebow's last useful snaps in the NFL were against the Patriots in the divisional round 2 years ago. So we know Bill Belichick is looking at tape all week long. What did he do to the Steelers? How was he effective? This 8-game stretch that he went through where they kept winning games improbably. What's he doing? It seems to me that Bill Belichick could divine a way to use Tebow effectively. And I see, if nothing else, I can absolutely, especially with question marks, maybe. Now, listen, these are conspiracy theories I'm throwing at you. But maybe this tells us something about Rob Gronkowski, that Gronkowski is not going to be a dependable red zone target, or at least they fear that that could be the case. And therefore, they have to do something to tweak the offense to ensure that they're scoring touchdowns, not field goals, when they get down there. Now, how do you do it? You're not going to take Tom Brady, one of the great QBs of all time, off the field. However, if you line him up in the backfield, Tim Tebow, you hand it off to him, he throws it, all the hokey stuff that all the teams do. Goes out for passes, all this jazz. Why? I mean, that seems scary to me. And the proposition of that happening, makes me think, oh yeah, they'll do that, and they'll dominate in the red zone.
I feel like they'll throw that in here and there, maybe. You know, he's a role player. We're talking about a role player. You know what I mean? When they drafted Julian Edelman, he was a quarterback too, and you know they turned him into a wide receiver. I don't know if Tim Tebow can do that, but you can mix him in at these other spots, H back, whatever. But he's just a guy that has no guaranteed money trying to make a team. To me, he's like Donald Jones from the Bills that they signed, and Michael Jenkins, and all these guys, and they just kind of throw it against the wall and they see what sticks. And Tebow, I think, has a better chance to make the team than those guys because he's a quarterback. You usually have three quarterbacks, and I don't think they'd sign him unless they thought he had a legitimate chance to make the team. But he's just one of those guys. And I think Belichick, from stories I've heard, he does enjoy tweaking the media a little bit. He does enjoy saying, you don't think I'm going to do this? You know, I'm going to do it. And that's just like a nice little bonus. That's not the reason he does it, but he doesn't mind it.
I buy, and I also buy your little human element there, that that he's friends with Urban Meyer, and maybe down, you know, a couple years ago there, you know, there was a familiarity with the kid, and
well, he just saw Urban Meyer,
right? And Urban could say, listen, give this kid a shot. You know, I could see that. I buy that stuff happens, except with the Patriots, because they're so, they're so closed off. What did you make of Wes Welker getting to Denver? And if you missed it, basically through Mike Silver of Yahoo, and of course the Top 100 reaction show, which airs every Thursday, and I'm a part of it. I enjoy dealing with this Silver. And just a week ago, we were talking about Tim Tebow, and he said, this is absolutely true, that I have a source that would not be wrong, that that Belichick was not a fan. Hate was the word. Hated him as a football player, not as a human being or anything like that, but hated him as a football player. And so Belichick had turned against him and so on. And now now he's in touch with Wes Welker, is Mike Silver. And Welker basically says, you know, this is much better because I can say what I want. There are no rules. There are no restrictions on me. How do you react to all that?
Well, it's not a surprise. I mean, I love Belichick. I'm a Belichickophile. I've read every book that there is on Belichick or the Patriots in that era. And they all say the same thing. This is a focus. They tell the players what to say, what not to say. Don't talk about anyone but yourself. Don't talk about the future. Don't talk about the past. Just talk about today. Speak. This is important to them. I don't know why it's so important to them. It seems like it's, you know, keeping injury information in-house. All this stuff is too emphasized. But I always remember reading, I think it was in Michael Holley's book, Patriot Reign, which is great. And they had this guy, Steve Martin, on the team the first year Belichick was there. And he was going on radio shows and, you know, cracking jokes. And you know how Belichick and people say they never read the newspapers. Well, he sees what this guy's saying, and he's just saying jokes about whatever. And Belichick, you know, gets him in a private meeting, and I might be botching the details slightly, but in front of the team, basically F-bombs him in front of everyone. He's saying to the other coaches, do we really need a bleeping comedian on the team? And this guy ends up being an expatriate within a year. You know, he hates that stuff.
But I don't like that. It's not American, first of all, and it's ironic that the team calls itself the Patriots and wears red, white, and blue, and they act like they're in a totalitarian state with this. It's football, after all. Can't it be a little bit of fun for these guys? Who is a free agent would want to go to that? Who would want to go into that environment?
Their answer would be they're eliminating distractions. And the track record speaks for itself. And obviously they love football and they love teaching football. So I think that's why people would go there, is to win and to get better. But you're right. I don't think it seems wildly paranoid and unnecessary, a lot of the things that all football coaches do. And Belichick and the Patriots would probably be at the top of the list.
I wonder if they're the first. I don't like if the Patriots are the first one to perpetuate this nonsense about we don't care about who we're playing kind of thing. It's a rivalry. That's for fans.
No,
that's not
they don't
for
do
us.
That. They don't do that.
They do that. Then they just go out and smoke them, but they never talk about it publicly. Shame the devil if they ever would be honest about their feelings. Going out and peppering a team 58-0 is showing that you have an axe to grind with that team. But then, oh, no, we're professionals. We don't do anything like that.
Well, they love talking up the opponent. That's the thing that he does more than anything. I mean, he's always bending over backwards. I remember last year they were playing the Jaguars, and like in the first press conference before that week, he's talking about the Jaguars' like first half red zone offense. They're like, no one's got a first half red zone offense quite like the Jaguars, because he has nothing else good to say about the Jaguars.
Well, like I say, you say the Jaguars. Had it been the Jaguars where Tim Tebow landed, we would all scoff and say this is obvious a PR thing, and it's a sideshow, and it's going to be embarrassing for all involved. Here, to me, it sends a chill up my spine. The thing that's interesting, though, I've said this many times. If you really want to hear some negative talk about a team, go to their diehard fans, because they're the ones that have been through all of it. And as you point out, the Patriots are a team. We think that the infallible Bill Belichick, and they haven't won a Super Bowl in a long time, but they're always in the mix, and every button he pushes is the right one and everything. But the fact is, they are among – they must be – anecdotal, I don't have the numbers, obviously. But it's now that you mention it, they have – taking gambles on players here, there, and everywhere over the years.
Haynesworth.
Yeah, bring them in. Let's see what. Yeah, Haynesworth is the best
Chad
example.
Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought them in right in a row.
Right.
Didn't work at all. I mean, it couldn't have been. Chad Johnson cost them a Super Bowl, I think. I mean, because if you have a decent wide receiver that year, he's playing a lot of snaps in that Giants Super Bowl, getting one-on-one coverage, just sitting out there on the other side, and he was a stiff. He never could figure out the plays. I mean, he was and they paid him $5 million to do that. So they've had a ton of personnel mistakes, and the Patriot fan out there is leery of this Tebow thing. I'm kind of in the camp of, it's all good.
Not Sporty Simmons. He's over the moon.
We'll figure
Tebow,
it out.
Tebow, he's my main man besides Tom Brady.
Speaking of Simmons, where's that mustache?
Don't worry about the mustache. I lost a mustache bet, in case you missed it. I took the Penguins. He took his Bruins. We know what happened, and I don't want to talk about it, and I don't appreciate you walking into Studio 66 and throwing that in my face.
I'm just saying, I'm sitting across from you, and, I don't see it.
It'll happen. Don't worry your pretty little head about it. Now, listen to this. I want to ask you about, what did you think about, you mentioned Chad Johnson. What did you think about what happened to him? 30 days in the clink for that?
Well, I want to make sure I'm accurate on this, but I read something today that the judge was blind. Like, was that a factor in it, that she heard everyone laughing?
Really?
Yeah, because she said she hears the courtroom laughing.
No, that's not true. She says you slapped him on the backside. That's what she says. How would she know that if she didn't have the power of sight?
Just check it out.
What's the one sense out of the five you could eat most easily do without? Taste, touch, sight, hearing. The other one. I don't know what the five senses are. Hearing? What are the sight? What are they? Skinny tie. What are they? Right. Taste.
You got
touch.
Taste. You got touch.
Hearing.
You got hearing.
Sight.
You got sight.
Smell.
Yes. I was going to say.
I might do without smell. That might be my choice. But then you wouldn't be able to taste. But let's assume you get to keep the power of taste and forego
smell.
Well,
no.
Smell.
There is no such thing as taste without smell.
I know, but this is a hypothetical we're talking about.
Well, I think... Well, then you would give up smell because that's the biggest thing you'd be losing is the joy of eating.
No, I keep taste, but I have to, but I do without smell.
I'm not accepting these
rules. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous gambit you're taking if you say I'm gonna go without smell, because then you wouldn't be able to smell when there's dangerous poison in your house, dangerous gases being emitted.
Because that happens all the time.
I don't know.
I'm just letting you know
what all the risks are, the hazards of giving up one of your five senses. I'm trying to help you. This is a big choice.
Touch is a weird one. Yeah. I don't know how you could exist without touch. Not even an option. So
no, yeah, you wouldn't know if anybody forget about more, you know, naughty kind of talk. I'm just saying if somebody stabbed you in the back, you wouldn't even know. But then again, you would probably die, and then it wouldn't make a difference that you didn't feel it.
If
maybe it would be good. Like, oh, somebody stabbed me in the back. Oh, I didn't feel it, so no skin off my nose.
I mean, if you're allowing me to have taste, then smell's the obvious choice. There's not even a close second.
Of course you get to keep taste. I'm not going to take away both. I know physiologically you couldn't, but in this scenario that I'm offering you.
Yeah, then that's what I do.
I think I'm taking smell away. I'm going to roll the dice and assume that I'll get by without smelling things. So what? I won't smell fresh cut grass anymore. So be it. Perfumes, you know. All right. I still would rather be able to taste delicious, you know, tenderloin. I don't want to give up taste. That's not sight. What if you boil it down to sight and hearing?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I would probably go without hearing. It's a tough one because your
music,
you can't really. It's a lot tougher to communicate without hearing. But it would just be a shame not to, you know, watch things,
sports,
and see everything,
movies,
see
they'd all be gone.
See your kids and all that sort of.
Oh yeah,
thing.
And kids. Yeah, see your kids. That's number one. Not being able to see my kids. That's why I couldn't do it without sight and also sports and movies. Skinny tie. How say you?
Out of those two?
No, out of the five.
Oh, out of the five. I mean, obviously, smell is kind of the best one. I mean,
it is. That's the obvious
one. You know,
well, make that the poll question. I want which of the five senses do you give up?
But it's stupid to allow taste while you're taking away smell.
Don't you call me stupid? I'm trying to create something. I'm trying to think it through. Because if you lose smell, of course, I understand what your point is.
Well, here's another. When you're setting up polls, you want it to be close voting, and I think you're setting up a situation where 90% of people are going smell now.
Well,
if you're getting,
you know
taste.
What, time will tell. We won't know until we see the poll results. Now, next issue is want to talk about the thing I just put up on NFL.com. It's something we talked about I think a week or so ago. It first started kibitzing about in light of the Heat playing the Spurs, which is the best possible scenario of the various concoctions you had out of the Final Four. Would have been bad for ratings and stuff if the Pacers and the Grizzlies were playing each other right now. Of course, I don't care from rating standpoint. I don't care. Neither one of us is are network execs, so the ratings aren't important. From a fan's perspective, what's the best Final Four for January/February 2014, ending in New Jersey? I laid out eight scenarios. You can dig them up at NFL.com/Shek, S-H-E-K. I've given eight. As usual, people attack them. I hate all their teams if they're not listed in here. One Falcons fan has suggested I kill myself for not including the Falcons.
That's just a phrase.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm toying with it. Maybe it is enough. Oh, by the way, before you peruse what I've done and come up with one of your own and drop me a line at Damashek if you want to offer up yours. Thanks to everybody who did tweet me their keen ideas. It's my birthday, and I'm curious why no one who's ever on this show is on the show today. Is it when this show ends, am I going to walk out of 66 and be like, surprise, Handsome Hank and Rank and Hanzus and Sessler and Black Tie are all going to be out there with a big cake for me? Is that what's going to happen?
There's a rumor that they are congregating somewhere.
Really?
Planning out something extravagant.
I see.
I didn't even know it was your birthday. Happy birthday.
Well done.
And yet you have to go to the D-team you know, with me here today, with everyone else.
No, indeed. It's quite a thrill to know that you're not here just today, but that you will be here in perpetuity so that I can annoy you with my because I, like
so
I
what
said,
are you doing for your birthday? Anything?
There's, you know, listen, there's you, there's Bert Breer, there's Jeff Darlington, there are all the other people out there in the world chasing real stories and looking for facts and for, you know, sources and everything. My thing is reckless speculation. That's what I like to do. That's, you know, some people have their oils. Some people have their clays. I have my reckless speculation.
So you put eight of these options up here with the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Lineups.
Tell me what you think would be a good one.
Well, the initial one I had was the most boring answer, apparently, which is Seahawks, 49ers, Broncos, Patriots. Apparently,
listen, that's a great one. It's impossible to argue with. But what I did was, it'd be great to see Peyton get another Super Bowl. Now, if he would play Eli, it's another scenario I throw out there. Of course, that's fun. But think in real terms. What do you think would be if Eli and Peyton were to play one another? And that's not an impossibility this year that could happen. Or at some point in the next, so let's say 2 years. At some point, Peyton Manning, it might be this year. Who knows when. At some point, it's just going to go away. This is what happens. And as I always point out, they generally, football players don't generally, well, he's not as good as he used to be. It's like falling off a cliff. 1 year they're good, the next year they're zero, it seems like. If Peyton and Eli were to play one another, and Eli would beat him head-to-head, then the conversation's over, right?
No.
It's over. If Eli beat Peyton head-to-head, then there is no way you could make an argument in favor of Peyton over Eli at that point.
I would. Of course you would.
It's funny how the Super Bowl.
It's not about one game. I mean,
it's not one game. It wouldn't be one game at that point. It would be three successful playoff runs. And by the way, it's funny.
But so many things went into those. You don't think Peyton Manning could have run those Giants teams into a Super Bowl?
No, I don't. No, as a matter of fact, I don't. That's what I always said. If you're asking if Peyton Manning had been on the Giants in both of those Super Bowls against the Patriots, do I think that the Giants would have won? No, they wouldn't have. He would have turned the ball over somewhere along the way, and that would have been that. That is the difference between those two. What about, though, so the other thing is, so I throw out Peyton. I thought it'd be fun to see him in one more Super Bowl.
A lot
Bowl.
Of Peyton on these options.
Well, of course. He's a compelling figure in the league and in the twilight of his career. What if, though, instead of in the scenario you just threw out there, I thought Peyton against either the Mighty Niners or against the Seahawks with their great defense would be fascinating. But better yet, what if it's the Patriots and you put them against the 49ers? And now the Patriots, who have played in the last two title games and lost the Super Bowl that they were supposed to win, and then you went with the 49ers, who have been in the last two championship games and a Super Bowl and lost a Super Bowl that they were supposed to win. Whoever loses that game, it would be ruinous, right? I mean, how many beatings can you take with deep playoff runs and just keep coming back from it? Whoever would lose, if you would get, and this is I bet you a lot of people are picking Patriots to play the Niners for the Super Bowl. Whoever would lose that game would have to be positively destroyed, right?
Right. But the 49ers fans at least have the fact that Kaepernick and Harbaugh are young. Speaking as, you know, a Patriots fan that was, you know, at both of those Giants losses, and I think probably all the Patriots fans. I left the second one thinking, well, that's it. You know, they'll probably get close or whatever. But the odds on them ever getting to the point where there's 4 minutes left and they're a nice first down throw away from probably winning the Super Bowl, the odds on them getting back historically are less than 50-50. Belichick and Brady are not going to get there one more. And every Patriots fan just wants that one more. So I don't think I'm alone in thinking last year when they lost to the Ravens, there's a small part of you that's like, well, at least they didn't lose another Super Bowl. Because it's so rough to get.
It's
easier to lose the one before that. It just is.
Well,
you've lost faith at this point. Somewhat in the Patriots coming through. Well, most Patriots fans have probably lost faith in winning another if they get there. Not only because, you know, the 49ers were great last year. Whoever was making it was going to be good.
I disagree. I understand your larger point, but I will say here's one that disproves that's always true. In January of 2002, the upstart Patriots, when they were still a likable bunch, plucky gang, no individual introductions, we're a team and all that jazz. And they go beat the Rams. But before that, of course, in between the Tuck Rule game and beating the Rams in the Super Bowl, of course, they went into Pittsburgh and upset a team that was a prohibitive favorite to knock them off and was supposed to and everything else. That was way worse. I was in the stadium that day. I would rather the Steelers have advanced to the Super Bowl and lost to the Rams than get upset by that stinking Drew Bledsoe coming off the bench after 2 months away and whatever else happened. All the other hokum and hooey and applesauce you threw at us that day. I don't want to get upset. The point is, you're not exactly right about that, because sometimes it's
not always worse. It depends on the situation. You're right. If you're that big a favorite where no one was – that wasn't even supposed to be a game. I mean, that harmed one of my friendships. I didn't speak to my Steelers friend for a couple of days.
He
threatened to desecrate my room. You know, it was
I want to be friends with him now.
You should be.
All right. So we look at these scenarios. What about Tom Brady? Now, it's easy to say in a vacuum, oh, yes, of course, I think he will. But I remind people here's a question with young quarterbacks too. Will blank ever win a Super Bowl? Will Tom Brady, I'll start with him. Will Tom Brady win a Super Bowl again?
No. If I have to choose yes or no, I think the odds are against it. He's got how many years left? Two or three?
Exactly right.
And just the way the NFL is, I think there's 6, 7, 8 teams that got a chance every year. And the Pats they're almost always in that mix. They are always in that mix, but the odds are against it.
Yeah, forget 1 out of 32 odds. Let's be realistic. I know that even the bottom feeders right now feel like, I bet Jags can make some Jags fan or even Jags players can make a case for how they get to the playoffs, and then we'll see. But realistically, let's say there are 8 teams or 10 teams in the league that really can win the Super Bowl. So you have a 1 in 10 chance. Those are long odds right there. And when people say, oh yeah, Andrew Luck is going to win multiple Super Bowls and RG3 is going to win multiple Super Bowls and look out for what Cam Newton's going to do and Matt Ryan, oh, it's just a matter of time for him. Well, guess what? They only give out one Lombardi a year. So it's fine in a vacuum to proclaim that this guy is going to be a winner. But, you know, in 10 years, those 1 in 10 odds, 1 in 12 odds or whatever.
Especially when Joe Flacco wins it sometimes.
That's exactly right. When guys like that start sneaking in, it's like, well, wait a second. We already anointed some other guys to get their ring. So, yeah, it's an interesting point. All right. So before we get to Jason Witten, Rosenthal, do you want to throw one out here?
Well, you threw out 8 different options. I have to say I love the Lions, Vikings, Browns, Bills, Final Four. Once you came up with that, I just thought, well, that's it. If I can really choose any options, maybe I would tweak. I'm trying to think if the Vikings would definitely be in that group.
Well, that's the question. Who is the – so we've talked about that with Hanzus and Sessler in the past. Who is the longest-suffering or who are the longest-suffering fan bases? Immediately you rule out the Texans, the Jags, and the Panthers. Those fans haven't been through enough over the – you know, they've barely been around. They've been around for 5 minutes. So – who did I exclude here? The Cardinals.
The Seahawks.
Not in Arizona. I thought about the Seahawks, but they don't feel like a loser right now.
They've been around for so long.
Yeah. Right.
They've been around for so long and they have great fans. So that's a nice 1-2 combo of suffering mm-hmm. that they need to be relieved. So that's my answer.
How about that? The Falcons are another one. The Falcons have been in 2 Super Bowls, but wait, 2 Super Bowls, right? Or one?
Not a great fan
base,
though.
They only played in the one Super Bowl. They only played in the one Chris Chandler Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. And the Cardinals haven't been in Arizona long enough, and I don't get the sense. I feel some apathy, so I don't think that would be as exhilarating. The only problem is, between the Lions and Vikings, if they play one another, it would be fantastic. Except, as I indicate here in my little scenario, I decided that the football gods weigh in by tearing off the roof the night before and filling the joint with snow. That's what it needs, because that's what an NFC North game needs. They don't need to be in some clean, climate-controlled dome. If they're going to do it, let's do it right, you know?
You only have one more year for the Metrodome to break, so...
I know, and then they go outdoor for 2 years, and then they go back indoors.
So maybe get it in that two-year window at Minnesota.
Yeah, and I also speculated that it would be neat to see Alex Smith get to the Super Bowl to play the 49ers, but then I realized, let's save that one for the 50th anniversary. Now, that would be... Or... by that same thing, you go Alex Smith and the Chiefs getting it on against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. 50th anniversary of the first Super Bowl in California, where it all started. In the Bay Area, Alex Smith, a 49ers reject, going up against Aaron Rodgers, a Bay Area native. That's juicy, but that's 2 years away. 2.5 years away, in fact.
Or throw Andy Reid in there. I mean, throw Andy Reid against the Eagles in there instead.
Oh, that's in there. I've got that one in my scenario. Yeah, I've got that.
So make a choice, though. You got eight different options. You got to make a choice.
I did eight. I gave eight, and that was clearly not enough. Now I'm getting wishes that I take myself out on my birthday. Enough's enough with you, Damashek, is what the football audience is saying. You know? We get it. Good night. Now, before I bid you good night, I wish to say be on the lookout for I just sat down with DeSean Jackson. We jumped into the sports car, Philadelphia Eagles star wide receiver. We wheeled around the streets of L.A. He's an L.A. native. We drove around. We had a gay old time. It was really good. I don't want to pull back the curtain too much. Suffice to say, he got me a nice little birthday present out on the streets. It was a lot of fun. So be on the lookout for that. And also at NFL.com/Shek, S-H-E-K, you can see the eight scenarios that Rosenthal and I are kibitzing about currently. What's going down at around the league right now at NFL.com? Besides Tim Tebow, are you allowed to discuss anything else right now?
Well, it's mini camp season. We got 23 teams, so we're doing a lot of that, and then it gets real quiet. We'll have our best tight ends in the NFL series. You know, we did the wide receivers last
week.
Yeah, tight ends are coming up.
We'll get Wessling in here to break down his top 40 wide receivers. Check that out.
I mean, we'll keep it rolling. People kind of take off the month, but we're still going. We're doing a series on breakout players. I mean, and if there's nothing out there, we'll just make some stuff up.
I like that. All right, listen, Greg Rosenthal, welcome to L.A. I am excited to listen to periodically check in with you here on the podcast to see how your transition is going. I know you're not a stranger to L.A., but I'm endlessly fascinated by the differences between New York, the sports media there versus what goes on out here. I contend, this is a conversation for another time, but I contend that as much as people say, L.A. media is so soft, it's so easy compared to other places in the country, I say that when Dwight Howard doesn't re-sign with the Lakers, it will be the fault of the L.A. media. They hung this guy out to dry. It was his fault while he's playing hurt. I think they're going to be responsible for him leaving town, not unlike New York media sometimes does to players.
And now you're looking for me to have an opinion on the L.A. media and Dwight Howard?
Not right now. I said it's a conversation for another time.
I
want you to spend some time doing it. But we will have some nice meals, I feel, because you, me, and Handsome Hank like to eat food. And so maybe you can join us.
I need your help because my wife, well, we're getting off topic, but my wife's,
I can give you any food tip you need, fella.
She's a chef, you know, moving from New York to here. That's a big concern. So
sure.
We'll talk.
Well, I think she'll be pleasantly surprised is my big answer to that is that now, of course, there's not going to be as many good restaurants in LA as New York, but LA underrated in the food department. There's some good ones. I mean, obviously, sushi is going to be delicious. But I'll hip you and your chef lady to all sorts of things. Does she make people call her chef? Like the way people say, you know, you have to call a doctor, doctor, which I'm cool with. Commish, cool. That's fine. He's Commish Goodell. I think we're starting to get a little professor, okay. Coach, all right, too. But we're getting a little bit pretentious when it's like, chef says this. Chef? That's a person. No. That's her title. I think that's too much.
I agree. She actually would get mad at me if she heard this because she would say it's cook because she's not the chef. She'd be a cook. Whenever I said chef, she'd be like cook. So
I like her.
They take it seriously, though.
All right. I like that, and I like you, and I like you moving out to L.A., so we'll kibitz soon. All right. There goes Rosenthal out of 66, and right now, with Skinny Ty's help, we're doing it a little out of order. We caught up with him a little while ago. It's Jason Witten. He's an 8-time Pro Bowler. He is the reigning NFL Man of the Year, the Walter Payton Man of the Year, and he is one of the tight ends that snuck into the precious top 100 list. Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham, one of those two guys is not going to be on the list, but this guy is. Here he is, everybody. Dallas Cowboys tight end Jason Witten. What's the poop, fella? All right, here he is, everybody. He's number 41 on the top players of 2013 list seen on NFL Network. 8-time Pro Bowler, Tony Romo's favorite target out there on the gridiron. It's Jason Witten. What's the poop, fella?
Doing good. Glad to be on with you. How you doing?
Well, I'm not too bad. Not as good as you. Like I say, you're considered now by your peers to be nothing worse than the third best tight end in pro football as we sit here in the summertime getting ready for 2013. How does that make you feel? Is that flattering? Or do you feel like, hey, listen, I broke the record for single season receptions. I should be number one.
No, I don't think it that way. Hey, look, it's always an honor to be to be recognized by your peers, and I think that's a great thing that NFL and NFL Network are doing. And but listen, I mean, I think you always set your expectations pretty high for yourself, and I'm appreciative of that. But ultimately, now, you know, my focus is just trying to help our team win a Super Bowl and be the best tight end I can be. That's for sure.
I see how this is going to go, Witten. You're going to be politically correct. You don't mind. You Vernon Davis is ahead of you. You're cool with that?
Hey, he's a great player. I mean, I have nothing but great things to say about him. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, if you don't think you're the best or you're not working to be the best, then, you know, that's for any good player in this league. You know, I think they need to – would have to check themselves out because I think that's the way you have to approach the game, both mentally and physically, and believe you can be able to do it. But again, whoever the other two guys – you said Vernon, I'm not sure who the other one was – obviously, they're great players as well, and that's what makes this league so special is the competition of guys within positions.
Well, if you haven't been paying attention, then get ready for this news. The two guys ahead of you are Vernon Davis and either Rob Gronkowski or Jimmy Graham. That means that either Jimmy Graham or Gronk is not going to be anywhere on the top 100 list. What does that make you think?
Well, somebody needs to check that top 100 list. One of those two is not on it because obviously they're great players, and you know they've kind of this position has really evolved over the last 10, 12, 15 years, and you know obviously Tony Gonzalez has done it for a long time, and fortunately I've been doing it for over a decade now, and but some of these young guys are very dynamic players and pose a threat against any defensive front, so. But maybe Gronkowski didn't make it because of the injuries last year. I'm not sure.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned that the tight end position has really emerged, and you've really bridged the gap from being sort of an old-school type of tight end into this newfangled type of looking guy that's more of a hybrid. I think of Aaron Hernandez cuts the figure more of a tall wide receiver more than a classic tight end. Who, if you had to, Jason Witten gets to keep his brain, you know, but everything else, the physique and the speed and all that stuff, who's the tight end you look at in the NFL right now and say, man, I wish I had what this guy has going on?
Well, I don't know that there's one guy you look at. I mean, to answer your question, I don't think that there's one guy that you take and say, hey, I'd like to be that. I think there's a lot of different tight ends that do a lot of different things well. I think that's where the challenge is to try to be that consistent tight end week in and week out, both in the pass game and the run game. I mean, to be that dual threat, it poses a lot of difficulties on defenses. But if you're looking at a couple things, I would say, you know, I mean, Vernon Davis' speed, obviously he's probably one of the best tight ends, runs like a receiver. I think Graham does a great job of going up and getting balls. I mean, so many throws that Drew throws up there that he just knows Jimmy's going to come down with him. I think Gronkowski does a great job in that system. He makes a lot of big plays and just a huge red zone threat that you know, I think we all look at and say, hey, man, I'd like to be him in the red zone, that's for sure. So there's a lot of different guys you look at, and you just try to piece and puzzle it together. And that's what makes this game a chess match. It's a battle every week, and you gotta be able to adjust and perfect your game in a way that you can match what those other players do.
You're a part of the Beat the Heat program, and that's what Gatorade has going on this summer. Talk about your involvement with that.
Yeah, well, it's a great program. I think we all know about Gatorade and what a great product it is. But really, just encouraging these young athletes, you know, football players in high school and middle school to stay hydrated so that they can be their best during the upcoming season. And I personally know what it feels like to be dehydrated and to cramp up. And, you know, unfortunately, some people have had worse injuries than that due to being dehydrated. So Gatorade is doing a great job of just putting it out there to let everybody know that to beat the heat, the things that you have to do and staying hydrated so that you can do so and obviously be the best player you can be. So I'm glad to be a part of that and fortunate to be here.
Yeah, fortunate. I get it. But is there some sort of moral quandary in your brain that you're a Tennessee Volunteer and Gatorade started at your arch rival University of Florida?
It did start there, but you know, it evolves. I mean, if it just stayed there, I would have a tough time just you know, partnering up with them. But it does evolve, and what a great product it really is. It kind of changed the game with rehydration. So I'm thrilled to be here. And you're right, they did go to Florida, and it started Florida, and that's a great rivalry. But, you know, we've overcame all that.
Well, listen, you're an eight-time Pro Bowler. Can't you use your influence to say, at least when I'm involved, can't we change it to Rocky Top Aid?
That's true. Maybe we should do it. We got to win a few more ball games up there before that happens.
Okay, fair enough. Also, love the story about you and the reason why you got the 2013 Walter Payton Man of the Year trophy back in February, the night before the Super Bowl. Do you get a copy, by the way, do you get a replica of the statue?
I did. It got sent to me, and, you know, that thing weighs about 45 pounds. So, you know, that thing coming in the mail, I felt sorry for the delivery truck when that came in. But, you know, what a huge honor. I mean, you know, first of all, just to be mentioned with Walter Payton, and I mean, I knew him as Sweetness and what he did on the field, but you know, to see the impact and how he lived his life, and just everybody around him, and to see his family was special, and just really humbled to receive that, because I know so many guys around the league understand that the platform that they have and the responsibility to be a role model, and that's something that I take really serious, and I want to make an impact, and really want to create a legacy off the field just like you tried to on the field. And just I can't say enough how humbled I was and what an honor it was for me to be mentioned with him and to receive that award this year.
And listen, you're deserving, like I say, a fantastic profile of you and the reasons why you got the award this year. But it's also the coolest trophy in the NFL, right? Is there any trophy that looks so good? Is that one the Cape Player?
No, it's pretty special. And you know, to that one, you know, it's going to be sitting in my office there for a long time, and something I'll be proud of, because it is a special trophy. And really, it's not about the trophy; it's about the guy behind the trophy, and that's Walter Payton, and just everything the league stands for and the Shield stands for. That's what he represented, and I was thrilled to be mentioned with him.
All right, let's talk about 2013. And as you guys are getting ready there on NFL.com, Gil Brandt, of course, the architect of those great Cowboys teams of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, has now picked the Dallas Cowboys to win the NFC East. What do you think about that? I mean, this, as always, this division's going to be rugged. What if I told you I can guarantee you two wins against one of those three teams? You absolutely will win the season series against the Redskins, Eagles, or Giants. I asked this question of Alfred Morris a couple of weeks ago. He said the Dallas Cowboys. How say you, Jason Witten?
Well, you know, he's going into his second year, so, I mean, he hasn't learned to probably hate a lot of different teams yet. you know, but when you play for this division long enough, you realize, you know, they don't like you and you don't like them, and that's for all other three teams in the division. So I would be thrilled to win them all in that division. I think it's one of the, you know, it's probably the best division in pro football. Every one of them is different. Every team's different. But it's just it's a challenge to go on the road and play those three teams. And, you know, some of them have changed faces with Philly and the system that they're doing. But there's just something different about those NFC East games. And you know, I appreciate Gil that has the Cowboys win in the East. But we know that it's a tough challenge. And for us, 2 years at 8-8, we got to be able to make the hump, get over the hump. And we got to play well early. And, you know, we know what we have to do. Have to not turn the ball over, and defensively get turnovers and just play winning football. Too many opportunities where we've been in the big game, but we came up short. We got to find a way to execute better down the stretch.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. And if I ask you about what about Tony Romo, I can predict the answers around that. But makes sense for me. I know that the secondary was shoddy last year, the last couple of years. The offensive line wasn't where you guys would like it. What turns this team into helps you guys get into double digits in wins? And what specifically gets Tony Romo playing a different brand of football where he isn't in the fourth quarter having to constantly feel like he has to make every big play in order for you guys to win those games?
Well, I think it's collective, you know, effort. I think we've got a good group of guys, of core guys that are really good players in this league, and the experiences that have gotten to this point. But, you know, offensively, we've got to run the ball better. I think we became one-dimensional way too much in the season where we were playing from behind. We got to protect the ball, and defensively we have to stop them and get the ball out, get turnovers. So, you know, I do think that we have the players to do it. We know this is a tough league. Other teams have those guys too. So focusing on those details allow you to be successful. And, you know, I know that's a little bit of a cliche in the answer, but that's what this game's about. That's what this league's about. You know, 60-70% of these games are coming down to 7 points or less. And you got to be able to find a way to execute in tough situations, whether on the road or at home. And that's what we're focused on doing. And I like our group of guys that we have, and we'll see what happens.
I also just want to get your reaction to the news that the Patriots this week signed Tim Tebow. He's going to be in minicamp now with the Patriots. What's your reaction to that? Because, you know, the thing you hear a great deal about is, hey, there's no position in sports that has more pressure on it than quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. It seems to me like the pressure goes into the locker room of wherever Tim Tebow is now, not because of anything he's doing, just because of the media storm. Is this a mistake to bring in somebody like that into a locker room, because that means you're going to be answering questions incessantly about somebody else?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I think New England is does a great job, Coach Belichick, of, you know, not allowing distractions to get in the way of the focus on being with the team and getting better. So, you know, I can see that. Obviously, you know, he's proven that he can play in this league and be successful, and we'll see how the process plays out. But I don't think you worry about those distractions, especially in a locker room like New England's, where such a veteran presence and a head coach that just doesn't tolerate that. So, you know, I'm sure they'll evaluate it and deal with it, but I don't think players look at that as an issue.
Last thing for you, Jason, it's summertime. What's your baseball team? Are you watching NBA finals? What are you doing to fill the void till football gets going here?
No, I am watching the NBA finals. We got a good series going, and you know, the Spurs dropped one last night, so we'll see if they can bounce it back here tomorrow night.
You root for the Spurs? You have the Mavericks in your backyard.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a Mavs fan, but I'm just, now that the series is good, it's a championship. You got to pick one, don't you?
I guess so. I guess that's a fair point. You're a Rangers guy, I assume.
Absolutely.
All right, very good. Last thing for you, actually, one more thought. Here's what you do. Go into Jerry Jones or whoever makes this decision. Instead of the navy blue jerseys or even the white ones, go back to the royal blue ones that you wore in Super Bowl V. I know you're too young to have seen those live, but have you ever seen video of those? Those look terrific.
I like those jerseys as well.
Yeah. Maybe you could sport those at some point this year, huh?
Absolutely.
All right, excellent. All right, listen, Jason Garrett, you're one of the good guys in the league and a part of the Gatorade Beat the Heat program, and we thank you very much for the time and best wishes coming up in 2013 here.
Thanks, Dave, but it's Jason Witten, not Jason Garrett.
Oops! No, you are not Jason Garrett. No, you are Jason Witten, of course. I apologize for that. It could be worse. I could have called you Jason Mraz. But I could have called you Jason Statham, too, and that might have been even cooler because he's good at karate. And so, anyway, Jason Witten, I apologize. Thanks very much for the time. Thanks for the info on Gatorade and one of the good guys in the league. We wish you all the best as you get ready for the upcoming season, man.
I appreciate you having me on.
All right, take care. I like him. Did you like him, Skinny Ty?
Oh, class act. Class
he seems act. Like a nice fella.
Especially being that he
I don't think you're allowed to. I disagree. You can't root for, if you're in Dallas and you're a Mavericks fan, you can't then say, well, now that the Mavericks are out, now I'm going to root for the Spurs. No, that's one of those situations where you have to root for anybody but the in-state rival. It doesn't make a difference who they're playing. It's they're out.
My roommate from college is a big Mavs fan, and he's rooting for the Spurs too.
Well, that's not accept. Doesn't make it right.
Some weird thing. I don't.
It's not weird. It's wrong.
It is wrong, and I don't know why they're doing it.
Thank you for agreeing at least on that. You don't do that. I mean, who the Mavericks have as a rival, if not the Spurs, right?
But I guess maybe the hatred for the Heat is so strong that it overcomes.
They don't play that up enough in the state of Texas, that three-way rivalry. That should be a much bigger deal in
the NBA. It really should be.
You know?
It really should be.
All right. Well, listen. Let's leave it there. Put that poll up about the 1 cent you want to lose. And if you have any sense at all, I think the correct answer is smell. If you can make a compelling case to the contrary, drop me a line. At Damashek. All check out that, and thanks to editor-in-chief of Around the League, Greg Rosenthal, a welcome return or full-time move out here to the West Coast, and we look forward to yapping more with him in the coming weeks and months and years, or at least until I get fired. Either way, we'll be back with episode 162 later in the week. Skinny Tie, we have any guests lined up?
We might have Ahmad Bradshaw.
Oh yeah, new of the Indy Colts.
Yeah, so
that'd be fun.
Be good. Yeah.
All right, I look forward to that. Maybe the fellows will be back.
Hopefully, they should be.
They're here. They're on the other side of the door. I'm going to go celebrate with the gang. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.